jurors were sent to deliberations in the salacious trial of Samantha Hall, nicknamed Femme Fatale in the tabloids.
Charged with first-degree murder, an arguably risky charge given that the victim, Troy Singer, died of injury during a lone sex act.
Your verdict should not be influenced by feelings of prejudice, bias, or sympathy. Your verdict must be based on the evidence.
Samantha Hall faces a murder conviction in the death of Troy Singer, her submissive lover she instructed to hang with a rope in her absence, finding her responsible for intent, negligence, or reasonable conduct will be the difference between a first-degree, manslaughter, or not guilty verdict. Arguments have concluded and deliberations are in progress. 25 minutes after Samantha Hall sent her lover a text instructing him to asphyxiate, she placed a call to his cell phone. When that call went unanswered, she waited 14 minutes before placing another call, this time to authorities.
Winter Park Police Department, how may I help you?
Hi, my name's Samantha Hall. I was hoping someone could do a welfare check at my residence.
What is the address?
696 East De Leon Avenue, Winter Park.
And who is the object of the welfare check?
My boyfriend, Troy Singer. He's 37.
Is there a reason you think he might be in danger?
He isn't answering his phone, and I'm worried. Can you send someone to check, please?
Yes, we'll send an officer. Is there a reason you should be worried?
He has health problems.
What kind of health problems?
Difficulty breathing. Can you call me on this number to let me know if something's wrong, or is there a number I can call back, or how does this work?
If there is a problem at your residence, we will contact you. If your boyfriend is okay, the responding officers will ask him to contact you.
Okay. Thank you. I'll be at this number. May I give you my information?
Okay, so what really concerns me is the calm in her voice. I mean, when she made that phone call, she was very nonchalant, completely lied about why she needed someone to go check on mm-hmm. her boyfriend, mm-hmm. and was just like, can you
it's
call?
Disturbing.
If she was so proud of this lifestyle and this was actually her
they were closeted
for each other.
They were closeted.
Yeah, Jenna, I agree with you 100% about
they
the tone of her voice, but the lie doesn't bother me whatsoever.
Yeah, no, I agree. The tone was a little off-putting. Yeah. She does pick
not,
up a little
how
bit
How can
later.
That not bother you?
She's why talking... would she want to get into that over the phone
well,
with a stranger?
Because she's talking to the police about
but
the
I'm
fact
just wondering,
that somebody might be dead. Don't
why
you
didn't
have to
she
tell
call 911?
Right,
that's the one thing I wanted to... I wasn't really sure. If she calls the police... I mean, obviously she calls the police, they're going to see what happened, but... If she hasn't heard from him in so long, why didn't she call 911?
Yeah.
But I think...
Or race over there. She owned her own business. Couldn't she just race over there?
Overall, was there anyone listening to that call that didn't feel really disturbed by the tone and demeanor of her voice? I think, you know...
I was surprised that she wasn't a little bit more frantic.
Right. Can you imagine your girlfriend or boyfriend or wife being... If they were even injured... And you thought that they might be in trouble, you would freak out,
right?
If you
truly love someone,
and she knows he had a noose around his neck, and if he's not answering, he could be dead. And she's completely non-emotional. To me, it sounds like a sociopath or a serial killer.
Okay.
Like, and how they would act.
Well, and again, I'm trying to look through my notes here. How much time elapsed between her call to him and the police?
I've made a note about that. It was 39 minutes.
Okay.
39 minutes after she sent her instruction text, and 14 minutes after she called him and he didn't answer it. Yeah. So my question is,
that's a lot of time.
Why would she wait that long?
She could have been deliberating sending strangers into her house where her boyfriend would have been found in a compromising or embarrassing
probably
position.
Probably a wreck.
Where her boyfriend might be dead. If she's worried, if she's worried that he might be dead, wouldn't you want somebody to go over there immediately?
It's a noose. We're not talking.
There's no reason
to wrist. It's a noose.
There's no reason to wait unless she wanted to make sure that he was dead.
Yeah. No.
That's the only reason to wait.
Also, something to think about, just throwing this out there. Steph had mentioned before that obviously this is something she's probably done numerous times. And so there's that moment in your mind when you know something should go a certain way that you're thinking like, could it? No. That's all I can think of where she had a moment sitting with that and thinking, why hasn't he? Because he always does report on time and he always checks in with her and she gave specific instructions. There was probably that moment of crossing your mind your mindset over to be like, wait, this is supposed to go. I've done this numerous times. It goes like this. Could it have gone a different way? And then...
No, there's no deliberation. Even if you're not a, like, beady, whatever, freak expert, as a rational, okay. logical, thinking person, if you tell someone to put a rope around their neck and choke themselves until they're almost dead, there are two outcomes for that. Either they're alive or they're dead. That's it. If he doesn't respond, it means he's probably dead. So wouldn't you call the police immediately?
Right. Well, and the other thing that concerned me...
Of course you would.
Besides, obviously, her calm demeanor is her choice of language. I mean, she said...
That's another
go
thing,
go check
yeah.
on him because he has health problems. He has difficulty breathing. Problems.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I imagine she probably didn't want to tell the police.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
It's and almost also, like she's like right. winking.
I have a question.
No, it's not
I have
like
a question.
She's
I don't know about that.
No.
Why do you think that?
Because it's a very odd choice of specific language.
Yeah, but
how
you're
would you phrase
having
it?
Difficulty breathing. He has a noose
That's
around
true.
His neck.
You might be projecting
right.
your own
yeah.
feelings on this.
Oh,
no,
we all
it's
are.
Just
let's deal in facts, not
wait,
opinion.
Yeah, I have a question
listening
about
listening to
facts.
This call makes me feel wait, physically sick. I'm
Carl,
sorry.
Did he text and say when he was going to follow her instructions? Did she know when he strung himself up?
No, he never responded to that last text saying,
so
I'm doing it.
So what if he had fallen asleep and didn't get her text? What if, I mean, I'm just imagining
asleep?
What had gone
no.
through her mind. He had a turkey sandwich and a whiskey soda. What if he didn't get her text right away? What if he was in the bathroom? She's probably wondering, did he actually start the process of this mm-hmm. fetish? Or is he in the middle of it right now? I mean,
or is he taking a shower?
Exactly, yeah. getting ready for this.
I don't think he could do
act.
Anything without her permission.
Yeah,
exactly,
no,
that's
not a
the
way
that's true. But she has no idea the timing. Right? She's using text only. She doesn't know when he started.
True,
that's a good point.
That is a good point.
But hang on, in the context of this relationship, isn't he supposed to act immediately?
Yes.
Yes, but yeah. sometimes
so,
when you have
would it be reasonable to assume that as soon as he got the text, he began?
But not necessarily,
out the
because
or
those first two texts, he's not asking,
home.
"Can I have a turkey sandwich?" He's saying, "I'm having a turkey sandwich. I'm having a whiskey soda." He didn't say, "Is it okay to do this?" So I guess there is a little bit of flexibility
but,
in there
right,
as far as what he can do on his own.
This is like a side debate,
but he has to
and
tell
we're getting away from the two most important parts about what we just heard, which are. Her voice is totally calm and devoid of emotion.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And she waited forever to call the police, and then she lied to the police over the phone.
And she right. didn't call
911. And regardless of anything else,
she didn't lie
it
to the police.
It doesn't show any worry. It doesn't show any concern. It doesn't show any emotion.
The fact that she called
and she
shows
waited.
Concern.
Yeah. Carl, I really appreciate your passion, and I don't mean to sound condescending, but... The more you approach this with a single-mindedness and the more you say that to think anything else is stupid, the more you're accusing all of us who don't agree with you 100% of being idiots. So that, like, that's very insulting. That, like, I appreciate that you can draw such a clear conclusion from all of this, but if it's not clear to the rest of us, that doesn't make us dumb.
I don't think he's saying that, Mason.
Yeah, I'm not saying that.
I feel like we have to have open minds in this case
exactly.
because it
right.
is a foreign
I
concept
will,
to a lot of
yes,
us.
I will give you that she sounded very calm.
Right.
What I also say about the timeline is that she didn't know when he actually started the act. Mm-hmm. And I will also say that she didn't call 911, and that is a concern. I'm open-minded to that. But she called some emergency services. So,
I mean, to be fair, if she was really intent on killing him, she could have just waited to come home after
work. No one had to get there before
and,
her.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, because that would have been a more believable excuse. She shows up from work and finds him dead. So, like you said, Mandy, I feel like the fact that she called might have shown some concern. If not, she just would have waited until she
got
home.
You know, I'm not trying to call anybody dumb. I just think that if you listen to the call as a human being, it's devoid of any kind of human emotion or compassion. It's eerily calm.
But that's also us projecting how we think people should respond to situations. And I think people respond to stressful situations in a lot of different ways.
That a loved one might be dead?
But, you know, maybe she was having to shut down her emotions.
But that doesn't prove intent.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I mean, she's a very calm person. You can tell by the way she sits in court that she internalizes a lot of stuff.
I'm sorry. I just don't understand how you guys aren't as... how you're not seeing this the same way.
I don't understand how that proves intent.
Did you all hear the same call?
Let's deal in facts. How does that prove intent? How does the tone of her voice prove intent?
It doesn't necessarily prove intent, but it shows what a kind of person that she is.
What kind of person does this show that she is?
She's a person that either doesn't care that he's dead or is happy that she's dead and she's trying to hide it.
How are you
biggest projecting
because she doesn't show
that?
Any she isn't I'm not projecting it. I listened to the call. In the call there's no emotion. There's no concern.
Right. And then
she
we all
waited
heard
forever.
The same call and
right.
got, different
yeah,
conclusions.
Got different
conclusions. So that is a projection that you are making. This isn't a fact. Yeah.
Maybe you all need
facts.
To listen to the call again then because it was pretty clear
we've
to me.
We've heard it enough
yeah,
times.
We've heard it
we've
so many
listened
times.
To it
I don't
so
think
many.
But again, I think people everybody responds differently to situations that are, you know, possibly dangerous. I feel like some people maybe in order to survive that type of situation have to shut down their emotions. They can't she is a very controlling person. Maybe that's her way of responding is she has to keep her emotions in control and in check. It doesn't necessarily mean she is heartless. It's just that's how she responds to those types of situations.
I
that might not be
you
how
Steph.
You respond yeah. to a situation, but that's not to say other people don't.
And in theory, she created a knot that he could easily disengage.
Yeah. We have no idea.
We really
I
know.
Don't
know.
It's a shame. I can't believe the police.
It would
yeah.
be open and shut if they still had the knot.
If they still yeah. had the knot. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Samantha Hall gave a statement to police that she tied a pheromone friction hitch. The defense called an expert in rigging, aka rope tying.
A pheromone friction hitch is a load-bearing knot common in bondage. It's popular because it has a quick release feature.
What is a load-bearing knot?
Well, a knot designed to sustain weight.
And how does its quick release feature work?
It's really quite simple. You pull the end of the rope and the knot unravels, kind of like pulling out a slip knot.
Thank you. Miss Largo, are these photographs accurate portrayals of pheromone friction hitches?
Yes, they do look accurate.
Your Honor, at this time I'd like to introduce defense.
The pheromone friction hitch looks somewhat like a noose, with a loop sticking out of its side. In some of the evidentiary photographs, this loop is large and prominent. In others, it's small, discreet.
Detective, can you please walk us through what happened when you entered the playroom?
I opened the door and saw Mr. Singer hanging by a rope. The rope was around his neck and he was immobile. His feet were partially but not fully on the floor. He was clothed. I approached Mr. Singer and noticed a twitch in his left hand that made me believe he was alive, so I placed my arms around Mr. Singer and I lifted him to relieve the pressure while I extracted the knife I carry in my pants pocket. I cut the rope and maneuvered him to the floor. I was alone and I called for assistance on my radio. There was a knot affixed tightly to Mr. Singer's neck, so I used my knife to cut into it and free his airway as quickly as possible. His skin was warm, but I couldn't detect a pulse. I administered CPR until paramedics arrived.
You said there was a knot affixed to Mr. Singer's neck. Do you remember what the knot looked like?
Not exactly. I can't identify what kind of knot it was.
Did it come apart easily as you attempted to free Mr. Singer?
No, it was very tight. I needed to use my knife.
In other words, it didn't easily unravel.
Detective Miles, do you have experience with knot tying?
I know a few basic knots, including the handcuff knot they teach us at the academy.
Have you ever heard of the pheromone friction hitch?
No.
Amon's cleft knot?
No.
Locking slip knot?
No.
All of these are common knots for auto asphyxiation.
Objection. Counsel is testifying.
Withdrawn. Detective, given that you aren't familiar with a pheromone friction hitch, is it fair to state that you wouldn't be able to identify one?
Yes.
And therefore, is it fair to state that you wouldn't be able to identify a quick release method of untying one?
Yes.
Okay, so we can assume that if the knot was intentionally mistied, if she was culpable in deliberately, you know, sabotaging the knot, then that's premeditation and that's first degree murder.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If mm-hmm. the knot was mistied but it was an accident, then that's culpable negligence and that would result in manslaughter.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But if the knot was tied correctly, then she's not guilty.
But I don't understand how we can say that, because even if it was tied correctly, which I don't agree it was, but let's just say hypothetically it was,
mm-hmm.
she still left him there to do it by himself. Wouldn't it have been the responsible thing to do to actually be in the room for that? It still mm-hmm. seems like yeah. the whole situation was negligent, and that was an unnecessary risk, and that she was putting his life in danger just by doing this. So even if, you know, even if you want to make the argument, which, you know, some of you might be, that she didn't do this on purpose, I think that you still have to at least consider that in the minimum, this was really reckless, wouldn't you say?
Right.
Well,
I agree.
Yes, but it's also really reckless of a grown man to put himself in a noose. So he's just as responsible as she was.
No, because we have to go back to the nature of their relationship, which is she tells
which
him to do something and he cannot say no.
Which right. their relationship was consensual, exactly. Mm-hmm. So he chose to say yes.
No, but he chose to say yes at the beginning of the relationship. The arrangement was, he said, our thing is you tell me what to do and I'll do it. He doesn't get to question the individual decisions themselves, even if in his head he thinks, oh, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. He has to do it, like going to the bathroom. If she said he can't go to the bathroom, he literally has to sit there until he pees his pants.
And that's
even if he doesn't want to, he's not choosing in that minute. She's forcing him essentially to do that. And he didn't have the option to say no.
I think you get the BDSM community maybe more than me, because I am of the assumption that there is free will and you can leave an S&M relationship, a dom relationship, dom submissive relationship, whenever you want.
No, I don't think you're understanding how this worked, because the expert in the court said this is lifestyle. That's different than playing. If you're playing,
yes, but you can choose a different partner.
If you're playing, then you know you can get out of it or whatever. But with mm-hmm. lifestyle like these people lived, he had to do what she said all the time. And you know, like in the phone call we listened earlier, there wasn't like, honey, if you want to do this, or you know, let me know if it's too much, or if you don't want to do it, it's no. You're doing this. It's not for you. It's for me.
So obviously she was getting so much satisfaction from this, that why would she want to kill the man yeah. that she has this
because
relationship
with?
Because
then she has fantasy.
But then she has nobody
she's
left
sick.
To dominate.
This is what
that's,
she wanted to
that's
do.
That's the judgment okay. thing again, Carl.
Yeah, the judgment.
So let's skip back to facts here. So this is something that I can't wrap my brain around, and please help me understand this, okay? If she did indeed tie the knot correctly,
mm-hmm.
he shouldn't have ended up dead, correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Correct. Yeah.
So can we rule out that she tied the knot correctly?
No, we can't.
No, we
because
can't.
Why can't we? Please help me understand that.
Because I think brink of unconsciousness, then we're leaving it to a vulnerable human being to be able to make a split-second
yeah.
physical
reaction. Yeah, he waited
reaction.
Too long.
He waited too long. I
he
believe
got
so.
Enjoyment
then if
from this,
she is then the dominant
or it
one,
didn't work.
Is the burden of responsibility on her?
Well, that's what I was going to ask Carl. If she had asked Troy to go kill somebody else, would you also say that he's not responsible for that because she told him to go murder another human being?
He's complicit in it for sure. But she's telling him to do it. It'd be like in a cult, like the Manson family or something, where they did it, but they did it because they followed his word and didn't question
please
it regardless.
Don't relate
kind of
the sexual proclivities of these people to a cult. It's not
in
a cult.
In a lot of ways, it's a similar mentality. It's a person of power.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I think born-again Christians are a cult, so I think
right,
you're in
just,
a cult.
Okay, wow. let's not get personal about that, okay? Yeah. Not attack people's
you
personal
are attacking
religious
people's
beliefs.
Personal preferences.
My faith in my relationship with Jesus Christ is a lot different than two people beating each other because
opinion,
a predator.
Carl.
No, I mean my comparison between I think the cult and what the relationship between these two people is similar is apt, because if you look at a cult leader as a predator, they find weak people that they can prey upon.
I'm sorry, you're just
and take advantage of them
so well right
no.
now.
No, it's fine. I'm not offended by that. And she is a predator who found a weak person to take advantage of. Like I said, when I was in my youth, I had a problem with drinking and drugs.
So you were a weak person that a religious predator.
No, That is
yes.
Don't
that's
no.
that's different.
Well, the thing I keep he was allowed to make these claims about right. someone else, and so I can make these claims about the thing I used to show an example.
You're doing the exact same thing.
I know,
he's
I'm doing,
doing
it, Dominic. Yeah. I'm so doing it as an example in that
it's
you
fine.
Should not
she clearly
judge these
she clearly doesn't know what she's
but
talking
the thing
about.
I keep
I'm not
going
offended.
Back to the thing I keep going back to is that you know, like you're saying, your past, people found you, I don't know, on the street, and they influenced you in a negative way. He went on this website of his own free will. It wasn't like, you know,
because he's a
someone
defective,
sinking
weak
out
person.
Teenagers.
And judgment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's not
you're...
like people who troll teenagers okay. and engage them in, you know, yes. sexual acts. He voluntarily went on this website knowing exactly what type of website it was, what type of lifestyle it was, and you know, could have just engaged in the, you know, part-time BDSM, but decided to take it to the next level as a lifestyle and invite her into his house. All right.
What, one could argue that Samantha Hall is the variable in what would have been Troy's ultimate demise anyway. If this was a lifestyle that he chose, this could have happened with any other sexual
partner.
That's
true, but it doesn't
upon.
Change the fact that she did it. And another fact, and I wanted to bring this up because I think this is really important.
I think I know what you're going to say.
Is that the cop said that the rope yep. was, the knot was tight. It was a tightly tied knot, and she had
because
to...
Because it was a load-bearing knot.
But that's yes. what the knot
But it's
knot
supposed to slip apart
but
easily
no, no, no.
if
that's
it's
what
tied
the knot
correctly,
expert
which
said.
It wasn't.
No, but the knot expert said it's supposed to be tight, but it has a quick release. So
right.
it's going to be tight on your neck, but then you pull it, and it releases. It's just like a slip
so
knot,
So why
she
couldn't
said.
She just quickly release it?
Can
well, that's
did
the issue,
she know
is,
the knot?
He didn't.
She didn't. She couldn't. She could not identify the knot when it was showed to her in court. Yeah. Can we just at least open our minds to the possibility of user error in that yeah. he was enjoying himself because he got sexual arousal out of this and he wanted to take it a little bit further and he chose to not pull the slip knot.
Can we also right. then entertain no. the idea that she may have incorrectly tied the knot?
We yeah. can entertain yeah. that yeah. idea. Yes. Absolutely.
You
we don't
have
to
at least
evidence.
Unfortunately,
consider
we have
that.
No way of knowing. I mean, that's
exactly.
the problem
but the,
here.
The police
is that
officer said it was tightly tied. She had to struggle with it and she had to cut
how
it away.
A Fairmont
the other,
knot
no,
would
the
be.
Other expert said it's a, I wrote it down. She said it's a simple knot. That slips out really easily.
But that it looks like a noose.
But you have to know how to release it. And the detective
She made it sound like it was simple and you could just pull it and it came apart. So the cops would have been able to do that.
That's not what she said. She said there's a quick release.
That's what I heard her say. So the police officer should have been able to just pull it.
Were you in the courtroom with the rest of us?
But she didn't know how that knot
works. Yeah, the police officer doesn't know the knot.
And it's an emergency situation.
She still said it was tight and she had to cut it away.
One at a time, guys. One at a time.
It's five. I mean, all five of us agree that there, if it's tied correctly, you have a slip that you get a quick release that you can pull, and that it looks like a noose, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So it might look like a regular noose. So if a police officer in a moment of emergency sees this around someone's neck, then they would cut it, not knowing that there was a quick release.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah,
right.
That's what I was thinking.
True.
I want to get back to what Dominic said, and he said you have to at least consider the fact that she might have either at least been negligent or tied it wrong, and I feel like everybody is so on the other side of it, and I don't understand why.
Well, I feel like we can't answer that question.
Exactly.
I think without the knot, there's no way for us to know.
But yeah. Isn't that central?
It is, and that's where I keep getting hung up.
Innocence,
is
or even yeah, first degree murder.
Is how do we make that decision if we yeah. don't know for and certain how this knot was tied?
So we need to try to figure out.
I think it's a piece of the bigger puzzle. Yeah. Though, when you look at all the evidence that we've seen, from the motive to how she behaved about doing it, to what she told him to do, to how she told him to do it, to the knot. If it was just the knot by itself. Then maybe that's not something. But when you look at everything else and the knot,
yep. mm-hmm.
I think it paints a pretty clear picture of what happened.
And Dominic, I'm going to disagree with you that it should be central. But because we don't have the knot anymore, it can't be.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this podcast, you have an interest in getting to the bottom of inscrutable crimes and trying to understand the psyche of alleged or real criminals. I want to tell you about a new subscription box service called Hunt a Killer. Hunt a Killer enables you to dive deep into the mind of a serial killer by piecing together clues to an ongoing murder mystery story each month. The Hunt a Killer storyline sets you up as volunteer to be a pen pal to a patient in a treatment facility for the mentally disturbed. Your pen pal will confide in you the details of his twisted desires through eerie letters, objects, codes, and clues that uncover his true motives. As your experience unfolds, you will follow his thought process, become engaged in his troubling past, and most importantly, anxiously anticipate his next move. It's the perfect challenge for someone who loves poring over creepy codes, ciphers, and clues, and wants to put their investigatory skills to the test. They even have an online community of several thousand members that are all working together to solve their mysteries. I cannot recommend this membership enough. Here's something important. The company only accepts 500 new memberships per week, so make sure you apply as soon as possible. You can apply for membership online at huntakiller.com. If you are approved for membership, you will receive a private link to subscribe. The hardest part after that is waiting for your murder mystery to arrive at your doorstep. To help support our show, Hunt a Killer has offered a 10% discount for listeners. Use the code DELIBERATIONS and get 10% off. That's code DELIBERATIONS.
How did Troy and Samantha meet?
They met on FetFinder. It's a common way for people in our community to meet.
FetFinder, the social media site.
That's right.
How did you know Samantha and Troy?
I never met Samantha. I knew Troy. He used to be a client of mine. I saw him from 2010 to 2012.
And what is it you do for a living?
I'm a professional dominatrix.
Can you explain to the jury what that is?
Sure. I perform a variety of services to paying customers, primarily men. I fulfill fantasies for them by assuming a dominant position. I do torture, humiliation, medical play, cross-dressing, candle wax, role play, and body worship.
Do you work out of your home?
Most of the time, yes, but I accept appointments at a couple of public dungeons in Orlando.
And is there sex involved in your services?
No, no sex.
I see. So how did Troy Singer come to be your client?
He answered an online listing of mine.
What services did he purchase?
He loved being bound, and he liked impact play, so I would usually bind him with ropes or cuffs, and then I'd strike him with floggers, paddles, canes. He liked canes. He had a high intensity tolerance.
And why did Mr. Singer stop seeing you?
He met a girl, and she enjoyed the same things he did, so he didn't need me anymore. He left the nest.
Left the nest?
Yeah, he didn't need to pay for it anymore, which was great. Most men aren't so lucky.
Did he tell you the name of the woman he started dating?
Yes, Samantha.
Mistress Carolyn, when talking about Troy meeting Samantha, you said most men aren't so lucky. What did you mean?
Well, it's hard out there, dating, and it's especially hard if you have a fetish, because the chances of meeting someone by a traditional method who has the same fetish as you are slim to none. And if you do meet someone you like and you want to share your fetish with them, you have to make yourself really vulnerable and risk being embarrassed.
Did Troy talk to you about his dating life?
Yes. For many of my clients, I'm one of the only people they can open up to.
Did Troy have a difficult time dating?
In some ways. Troy was an intelligent, successful guy, and his image was important to him. He didn't feel comfortable opening up about his sexuality to the women he was seeing. They typically had negative opinions about his predilections. In film and TV, guys with fetishes are portrayed as freaks. Women are taught to treat them with contempt.
Contempt?
Yes, or disgust.
So did Troy go on FetFinder to meet a woman for dating?
Yeah, a lot of people use it for that.
And was he happy when he met Samantha?
Very happy.
In your opinion, was a submissive man like Troy Singer lucky to meet a dominant woman like Samantha Hall?
Yes.
Troy and Samantha's FetFinder accounts were linked by relationship status. Troy was listed as Samantha's slave. In addition to sensual photos, their profiles displayed vacation photos, photos of each other making breakfast, photos of their cat. However, because of Troy and Samantha's discretion, the faces in these domestic pics were obscured. The end result was a blurry, erotic rendering of a normal, happy couple. The public was captivated by the strange dichotomy of Troy and Samantha's relationship, both the alternative and conventional sides.
Mistress Carolyn's testimony kind of raised a couple issues for me. It brings me back to the domestic violence scenario, and that we know that beatings were a regular part of Troy and Samantha's relationship, and I'm just really wondering, is it possible to have a loving relationship where one person is beating another person? And that really kind of is weighing on my conscience. I don't really know how to
It's a hard one for me to wrap my brain around as well.
I don't see how anyone can have a healthy relationship considering her interest. I mean, if you look at her profile on that FetFinder, just to name a few, belt spanking, belt whipping, bondage, breath play, discipline, clothes pinch, choking. Okay, there's choking right there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what's this mind? Okay, I can't even say it.
Effing.
Yeah, mind thank you. orgasm denial, whips, degradation, face slapping, discipline. It goes on and on and on. How can that be some kind of healthy relationship? I mean, to me, it just seems like abuse.
Well,
like if this was a child and these things were explained about, you know, come on.
Well,
I'm hesitant.
I mean, I know I'm getting
honestly,
off there, but still.
If you explain regular heteronormative sex to a child, it sounds crazy too. You're not explaining this to a child.
Well,
you're advertising yourself.
I feel like
he
answered it.
And he selected
I have to
her
say,
profile.
And for the purpose of full honesty and, like you said, having an open mind and everything, that I don't think that's the case here. But there are instances where the Bible says that if your wife is disrespectful in the course of a loving relationship, or if your partner, you know, in that situation, it's only a husband and a wife, but it is okay for you to discipline her, for you to beat her. So the Bible says that. And I don't advocate that. I would never do that in my relationship.
So why are you bringing it up?
Yeah,
I want to know where that's found.
I'm bringing it up because it gets back to the question of, can you be in a serious, loving relationship where there's abuse?
Mm.
And for people who adhere to the letter of the Bible, they would say that says that you can. So there are some.
But would that be consensual? Because in that case, that doesn't
sound abuse. Well, you asked if people can have a healthy relationship where they beat each other. You didn't use the word abuse.
Right.
So
exactly.
I think that's the difference is that, I mean, obviously, I'm a feminist. I don't want anyone to be in an unsafe or a situation where they feel compromised. But if they choose, if that's something that they want, then it's not abuse and it's a choice.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that's kind of the crux of this whole issue is this issue of consent. It seems that that's kind of what we're having to figure out here.
Well, I think go ahead.
No, the burden of responsibility. Like, I just keep coming back to this notion. If she is the dominant, in a parental child relationship, the parent is the one who is responsible for the child. If anything happens to that child because of negligence on part of the parent, mm-hmm. the parent is held responsible.
Yes, Dominic,
that's true.
But that child didn't choose that parent. Troy chose Samantha.
Nor did the child choose a submissive role.
That's and exactly willingly right. agree
but
to do those roles.
Still in that submissive role.
But you could make the same argument that he didn't choose a submissive role because it said that this fulfills something that he needs. So he didn't choose to be a dominant submissive. He just is a submissive,
so one,
like a child would be.
Yeah, so another thing that concerned me, and again, trying to get to the heart of this issue of can you be in a loving relationship with someone that beats you, is Mason, can you read that email that where they talk about the leftovers incident? That was kind of,
I'd rather not, but I will.
Okay.
Okay, so this was State Exhibit 76, if you guys want to follow along.
Okay.
Slave. This morning I found the pasta from last night left uncovered in my refrigerator. I swear I've warned you about that before, so either you're completely useless or you're deliberately antagonizing me. This is not a joke. I've had a difficult day, and this is the last exertion I needed tonight. When I get home from work, I want you bent over the dining table. Have my steel cane lying next to you. I expect absolute silence while I beat you. 10 strokes. If you make a noise, I start over. Don't reply to this email with an apology. Just do it. And then it's signed M, mm-hmm. which stands for mistress.
Right.
Just sick.
It's sick.
It is. Don't you find it a little weirdly charming that it's about leftover pasta, though? I mean, they were. Okay,
oh my
Carl,
God!
What about they this? Are charming?
They were in
your definition of charming.
Weirdly combined. A weirdly combined. I mean, they were closeted. They were closeted in their you know,
I feel
preferences.
Like you're saying that just to be adversarial. Now, there's nothing charming about this.
It was about leftover pasta. If you just replace the steel cane beating, which is not something that I do again. If you replace that with like, ooh, I'm, you know, just a slightly
no,
mix, like,
no.
I'm beginning to wonder.
There's nothing playful about this email. She specifically says, this is not a joke.
Well, I disagree with Mandy. There's nothing charming about this to me either. But to her point, if you replace it with, like, I'm so mad about the leftovers, you're in for 50 kisses tonight. That's, I think that's sort of the equivalent.
That's not hurting someone.
But that
was their relationship.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. And again, but that brings up the issue is but was this a safe relationship?
No,
I mean,
it wasn't.
And again, I don't know the BDSM community, but is there a limit
is
to
smoking
how
safe?
Exactly. Is how is there a limit
smoking.
Where you've
Actually,
gone too far?
She's
most, beating them.
Most
she's
a, mistresses and dominatrixes, they most of them have a safe word. And I mean, I don't know. It's there's
how
always,
do you know this?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Well,
all right. All right.
Okay. Now
guys.
We're back to judgmental.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I would like to say one thing about this.
Is it from the Bible?
No, it's okay. not. Thank you. But you don't have to be condescending to me about that. Yeah. I'm not.
It was a little random.
Let's quote the Bible correctly, though.
What I wanted to bring up is that I think the nature of their relationship in a lot of different ways is predator and prey. And if you look at it from the predator perspective, if you were going to kill someone in this situation, who would you want? You'd want someone who likes to be bound. You'd want someone who has a high tolerance, who wants to take things to the edge. You'd want someone who's like a boyfriend in a relationship, not a client, because if it was a client, you're directly responsible and there's no debate. So I think when we're talking about all the nature of the relationship, was it safe? Was it this? Was it that? I think if you look at it from the perspective that she picked him because she knew that this is a fantasy, and with him, he's the perfect prey for this. That explains
a
lot of the relationship.
She didn't. Yeah. I don't think she picked him, because if we go back to Mistress Carolyn's testimony, it sounds like he picked her.
Yes.
Because he left Mistress Carolyn for.
And I don't know, at the very least,
lucky.
They found each
or they
other
found
on
each
a
other.
Website. He was on the website looking.
Lucky.
Well, I think she recognized what he was immediately and knew
how?
That she could take advantage of that.
Because
she's
everyone,
been doing this for 10
but
years.
But there was how many
she
other submissives on this website? Yeah. I mean...
And again, I have to reject the whole premise that you just laid out, because again, you're using predator and prey to correlate to dominant and submissive, and I think that's a false equivalency. We can't go down that avenue, because that's judgment. That's imposing our own ignorance or our own strong opinions on a lifestyle
okay.
that we don't understand.
Right.
And
fine.
I have to admit, I think Mistress Carolyn's testimony was pretty... you know, compelling. I mean, again, I wasn't really sure how I was feeling about that, but, you know, she made it seem, you know, like a reasonable activity for people that choose this lifestyle. And it
There's
just really
nothing reasonable about
by
any
her
of
saying
this.
He left
by
her,
your
it made me
definition.
Seem like he
by normal
had
definition.
More.
Look, Carl, yeah. Carl, listen, this is just as foreign to me as it is to you, but it's not our job to judge whether or not it's weird or immoral or whatever. We're trying to determine if she is responsible for this man's death. So we need to keep our judgments out of this. Oh,
okay, fine. So sticking to that, aside from judgments, let's look at what we know about her and her character thus far.
Okay.
Right? The tone of this email, that's a piece. Look at what she says in the email, that's a piece.
Yeah, but that
her,
was
wait,
giving
just
him
let me
exactly...
Just let me finish for a second. The tone of her messages... when she called the police, the fact that she left him there by himself and told him to take himself to the edge. If you look at all those things put together, that paints the picture of a person who, I don't know how you could say she's in a loving relationship with this guy. What about anything that we've seen from her so far conveys love or affection, or even a regard for his well-being.
Isn't all of this
There's
though,
nothing
an
that
act?
We've seen that
but
lends itself
act.
To that.
Yeah, it's the role act. They're playing.
And that's, again, trying
correct.
To have us judge their type of relationship, which we don't necessarily understand how that relationship works. I mean, I guess people can express love in a lot of different ways, and this is how they express love.
She was giving him what he wanted in all of those situations that you listed, other than the phone call, yes. But she was giving him love with this email. That's exactly what he wanted. And she was giving him love with the noose. That's exactly what he wanted.
So he wanted to end up dead, is that what
you're
saying?
I mean, to be fair, Janet read off her profile, so he was aware of what he was getting into. I mean, he looked at that profile just like everybody else.
He didn't know that she was
going to
murder him. She didn't...
So you've already made a determination when we haven't even gotten through everything.
Yes, I absolutely think that she did this on purpose, that she murdered him. I absolutely do, based on what we've seen and what we've heard.
I need to get some coffee.
Troy Singer suffers not one, but two tragedies. In addition to losing his life, he's posthumously mocked, ridiculed, and shamed. Troy Singer was an honorable and upstanding man, careful to never let his private intimacies be known. We honor our deceased with dignity, but Troy was not afforded that. Photos of his naked body, bound, his form clad in masks and hoods, have been splashed across the internet, subjecting him to vicious comment threads and derision. Troy was a handsome, affable man. He made an excellent living as a sales director. He was a hard worker. He was an organ donor, but his hope of saving lives was also disallowed him in his death because the police preserved his body as evidence. Everything has been taken from Troy Singer, whether taken by himself, fate, or Samantha is still to be decided, but his sexuality alone should not be his surviving legacy. Sadly, that legacy seems permanent. Next time on Deliberations...
There were entire clubs devoted to erotic asphyxiation in Victorian London. They were called Hanged Man Clubs.
As you're asphyxiated, you experience lightheadedness and giddiness.
I loved him. I never pressed hard.
Deliberations is created, written, produced, directed, and edited by me, Chelsea Cox, and launches as part of the Audio Boom Network. Today's cast, jury... Macklin McGlaughy, Sam Britton, Sierra Marks, Lindsay Russo, Adam El Sharkawi, and Alice Bowden. Courtroom, Michael Cortez, Allison Brown, and Victoria Murray. Special guest stars, rope bondage expert Cassandra McGee, a.k.a. Miss Cassie, and preeminent L.A. dominatrix Justine Cross. Theme music by Mellow Knights. Some music in this season is sourced from Incompetech.com. If you like this podcast, please subscribe. And if you leave a rating and review on iTunes, it will help us extraordinarily to return for a second season. Thank you so much for listening and supporting.